Good afternoon. It is 1:35 p.m., Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. We'll start an informal hearing on case number PU-17-365, Northern States Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery for 2018 rates. I am Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. With me is Commissioner Brian Crosius and Commissioner Julie Fedorchek. So we do have a quorum, although this is not a meeting. But I do want to emphasize that this being an informal hearing, we will not deal with any facts that are in dispute, only undisputed issues. And if anything comes up that would be in dispute, we will suspend the informal hearing and move toward a formal hearing process. With us from the commission today are Steve Call at the controls and Victor Shook and Jerry Lean and Sarah Cardwell from staff. I'll let the NSP reps introduce yourselves into the microphone. And Chris, since you're new here, we do have to speak fairly close into the microphones.
Dave Cedarquist, Regulatory Affairs with Xcel Energy.
Chris Buboltz with Transmission Project Management.
Okay, and that is everyone in attendance. I don't know who all might be listening, but do you have anyone else from NSP who's going to be presenting or speaking?
Yes, we have folks on the phone as well. I should introduce themselves. Go ahead, guys.
Good afternoon. This is Ryan Long from Xcel's Legal Department.
This is Chuck Burdick, Director of Revenue Analysis.
Chuck, what was your last name?
Burdick.
Okay. Anyone else?
No, that's it for Xcel.
And Chuck, do you say Revenue Analysis?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
We prepare the Revenue Requirements Analysis that goes into the petition.
Okay, I will turn it over to you, Dave. Are you going to kick it off?
Thank you, Commissioner, and good afternoon, everyone. We have before you our fourth TCR rate adjustment since the rider was established for us in the last rate filing. As you're well aware, the TCR statute in North Dakota authorizes the commission to approve a rider that's dedicated to the recovery of transmission-related capital and operating costs. We include in our filings the investment-related costs of projects that are new since the last rate case. And I think I might just say here that the existence of the TCR in North Dakota for us has been a key factor in enabling the company to actually extend our rate freeze from 2016 another 2 years through 2018. In 2018, we proposed to include five new projects that'll bring the total to just over 40. The revenue requirement for the year would be $7.5 million, just a little under $7.5 million, which is very similar to the revenue requirement that we've based the current TCR on. So we don't really have much of a change here. The rate is still about a third of a penny per kilowatt. We would expect a very small, maybe a nickel a month increase for the typical residential customer. This table here kind of gives you a little bit of the history of our TCR rate. As I said, this is our fourth rate adjustment. Kind of an interesting difference with the first one we had was actually recovering the revenue requirements in 2 years, 2014 and 15. Revenue requirements were recovered in the year 2015. We were able to do that because, for one thing, there were only 25 projects at the time. Some of the projects were just kind of getting started. Another key piece is that we had a lot of net revenues, REC B revenues from MISO that were offsetting quite a big chunk of revenue requirements from the project. So for that first year, we had an impact of about $1.88 for the typical residential customer. Of course, the next year, backing down to only a 12-month period, we saw the revenue requirement decrease that year. And then in 2017 and 18, which again have been very similar here, we have a bump up, and that's largely due to the really the evaporation of those net Rec B revenues that we got from MISO. We were getting in those earlier years anywhere from $1.1 to $1.4 million in net revenue, and that basically turned into zero in 2017 and 18. That's largely a result of a change in the return on equity that was allowed for those kinds of projects. It went from 12.3 to 10.8 or something of that range. So
based on FERC.
Yep, based on a FERC ruling. So anyway, that just kind of gives you a little bit of some context there in history about what we've been doing. Now, as a result of staff's review and some of the information requests, we made some small revisions here in the calculations for three projects. I will say that Ms. Cardwell did a pretty thorough job of reviewing the application and asked some well-placed questions, and the result of that was is that we went back, revisited some of our calculations, took a really hard look at projects that may have been included in that test year in our last rate case to make sure, again, that we didn't have any overlap. And we actually did find a project that was in the 2013 rate case that we are now have made a correction for. It's like $11,000 revenue requirement reduction. And then we had a couple of the new projects that we're going to talk about, the five projects. A couple of them we had inadvertently put an effective date of January 1, 2017 in this filing instead of January 1, 2018. And the result of that is that it impacted our true-up calculation, so we reversed that. And again, Ms. Cardwell found that for us, and we agreed to make that calculation. So what this slide shows is the reduction of about $62,000 in what we filed. So now we're at just under $7.4 million, and the impact is $2.45 roughly for the average residential customer instead of the $2.47 that was in part of our application.
Say, Dave.
So actually, would that mean... Sorry,
no, go ahead.
So in 2017, you're at $2.42, and then the 2018 proposed is $2.47, but you're saying it's $2.45.
Yeah, we may have now made this slight reduction, yep, to drop it a couple of pennies, yep.
The whole issue of keeping track of where the projects are recovered has been something I've never really had a good grasp on how you guys do it, because is there a clear line that all the transmission projects are recovered in the rider and there's none in the rates, or are there some that are in the rates, or how do you guys split them up? How do you keep track of them?
Yeah, at the time of our last rate case, which was a 2013 test year, we actually identified a number of projects somewhere in that 25 area, the number of projects that we were going to subsequently recover in the TCR. We set those aside. Now, there were some dollars from those very projects that were in fact in the test year and are in base rates. So what we do every time we file a TCR application is we back out or remove the test year amounts for those 25 projects out of the TCR revenue requirement. So that's how we ensure that there's no overlap here. We've actually quantified for every project in the TCR, we have quantified the amount that was in that test year. And that gets excluded then from the revenue requirement that we recover through the rider.
So why didn't you just take them out of the test year if you knew you were going to be recovering them in the rider moving forward?
I don't know why we didn't do that, though. I suppose that would have been another option. I don't know, Chuck, do you have a thought on that as to another approach to this, just to clean out the test year from these projects as opposed to making the adjustment?
I think it's just a matter of presentation. At the time of the conclusion of the last case, there were some of the dollars that were in base rates, and so we just want to make sure that North Dakota customers get credit for that side of it, unless you're doing the rate case at the same time as a rider filing, that's really your only opportunity to get them lined up again to set a new starting point.
Okay. Yeah. And so those were all identified then, and everything. You didn't have the rider prior to that, right?
Right.
It was new. So then moving forward from that point on, all transmission costs.
New incremental transmission projects that weren't part of the rate case became our focus then for the TCR.
Okay.
Now what happened that Sarah was able to see or ask about was there was a project that we didn't request to run through the TCR right away in that first TCR filing. It came in maybe a couple years later, and at that time we just inadvertently didn't think, hey, let's go back and check that test year and make sure that this one wasn't in there. So that was why we had to make that adjustment here. But because of the true-up mechanism that we have, we can make those corrections fairly easily, and the dollar amounts weren't all that significant anyway.
Okay.
But we're confident now that we've done that thorough audit and we've kind of set up in our minds now to have that process every year, is to go back and anytime there's a new project, go back to that test year and double check and make sure. Mm-hmm. And I suppose as we go further away from that test year, the odds of having a project be in both is going to be much less. So
the project in Minot, you intend to run through this?
Yes, I believe it's in the TCR already.
It's one of them.
Yep.
And then repairs on projects that were originally collected in rates, but the repairs will be collected in, or upgrades or whatever, to existing lines that were first collected in rates. And now there'll be anything new on those old projects will also be done in the rider.
Right. Until the next rate case, which then will zero everything out, put everything back in the base rate, and kind of start over again.
Okay.
So, before we kind of move on to talk a little bit more about the specific projects, I did want to address some concerns that Ms. Cardwell brought up in her memo regarding what she refers to as blankets, but what we like to call programs, because we really have, for the most part, discrete projects within these groupings that we call programs. They're not really blankets in the true sense that we don't know what projects we're going to be working on. We're pretty much able to identify and establish what the budget's going to be by project. So we call them sub-projects, but they're grouped into these larger groupings.
So can you just describe what a program is in this context?
Yeah, for example, I've got a listed on the slide. Here are six different programs, and Chris will definitely talk about this a little bit more, but we have the major line rebuild. That's one grouping of projects. The major line refurbish is a slightly different kind of grouping. And end-of-life ELRs, end-of-life replacement grouping. We have one for breakers. We have one for relays and transformers and those kinds of things. So we kind of categorize these into groupings. They are comprised of, for the most part, discrete sub-projects. But I think that's, you know, maybe part of the confusion is maybe we need to, and we can, and we've talked about doing some things in future TCRs to be a little bit more detailed or more transparent about what's underneath each of these groupings, because they are a little bit different than a unit project, which is like one project. They do represent multiple projects for the most part.
So it's like categories of different
of individual discrete projects within the category.
Mm-hmm.
Does blankets have? Go ahead.
I was going to ask, at what point in time does it go from a refurbishing project to a rebuild?
So between line rebuild, line refurbishment, and line ELR, they would all seem the same, and they are. But a rebuild is a total rebuild of the line. Everything from substation to substation would come down on that line to be rebuilt for defective parts or the majority of it, or it needs increased capacity where maybe the conductor needs to be replaced, but the pole structures can't carry that conductor based on the structural strength of those of the structures that it sits on. A refurbishment is when major line refurbishment is when line defects are identified through patrols, either aerial or foot patrols, and the majority of line defects, say on a circuit that has 100 poles from substation to substation, maybe has 80 of the poles that are going to require replacement. That would be a major line refurbishment. We're not necessarily going to tear the whole thing down, but maybe just replace those poles that are defective on that circuit. End-of-life replacement lines says that it's onesie-twosies from circuit to circuit. So maybe instead of 80 poles of that 100-pole circuit, three within that circuit are determined to be defective. Those would be individual asset location replacements that would be on this circuit. Then we'd look at where else do we have that type of scenario happening that we need to replace a pole on another circuit somewhere else.
Or repair and maintenance.
It's repair and maintenance to keep the asset up and going versus rebuilding the entire asset.
So using an example that is recently familiar, that Minot project, is that a major line rebuild?
That project totally is on its own.
That's a discrete project that stands on its own. Yeah,
it's not part of this grouping
okay.
at all.
Do you have one that is? Can you give us an example of some of these that we would be able to know?
I gotta find one here. There are actually in my notes here. I have there are in the 1 to 3 year range that would be in the TCR. So the TCR looking at the 18 test year, we actually have two discrete projects within that program that are active right now that make up the program.
Going back to the where you are replacing maybe a couple of the poles.
Yeah.
Why would that not just fall into the repair and maintenance line, expense line? In terms of just ongoing, is there a dollar amount?
There isn't a dollar amount. It depends on the asset that's being replaced. So, poles and cross arms are capital units. They're capital property units that are capital replacements. So, those types of replacements have to be capital costs. That doesn't mean when we go out there because we try to utilize the mobilization for crews. When we do these patrols, they're not just looking for capital replacement. They're doing total line maintenance inspections. So there could be operational or O&M cost projects that occur at the same time that are billed accordingly, say a guy replacement or a single insulator replacement are non-capital costs. Those get billed under a separate work order from the capital. I hope that answers.
So is there a industry term, blankets? You seem to not like that term. And I guess if that is an industry term and we have a dispute over whether these are programs or blankets, it might be something that we have to go to a hearing on. So I'm just wondering if this is an important distinction or what.
I don't think it's an important distinction. What some utilities do is they call these type of programs a blanket, because what happens is you have projects that aren't big enough that you are spending as much money on them individually. So say I'll go back to the old utility I used to work for. So say you would call something a blanket, and maybe your expenditures within that blanket, the maximum dollar amount you want to spend for the year is $5 million. So within that, then, is what they're talking about, where you have different projects. But none of those individual projects are big enough that you want to create an individual project ID for them, like the Minot load serving project.
So we just have a little distinction of terminology here, not really a disputed.
Yeah.
And we're kind of trying to make the point, too, that the work that's being done in these categories, these programs, is discrete. We know what they are. They're planned. They're identified, and they're discrete. There are, you know, when I think of a blanket, I think of maybe a category where you know you're going to spend money, but you can't identify what it is. You know, it might be like, for example, a storm. You might have a storm fund or something. You know that there's going to be probably some money spent, so you budget some, but you don't know. You can't foresee it. That, to me, is more of a true blanket. But we're just trying to make it clear that these projects, while they're grouped, are still very discrete, just like any of the other projects in the TCR, and we are able to track them very cleanly and clearly, so to make sure there's no overlap. I just was going to make one other point around these projects, that the expenditures are really very much in line with what was contemplated in the statute itself, which contemplated substations, transformers, and other equipment constructed to improve the power delivery capability or reliability of the electric transmission system. I mean, these programs are really all about how to extend or the lives or improve these lines in the most cost-effective way. It's not unlike our own vehicles that we drive. You know, at some point we make a decision, do I need to get a new car, or can I replace the spark plugs, the brakes, and still get another 30,000 miles out of it? That's what these programs seek to do in the most cost-effective way. So they're legitimate transmission expenses. We would feel and recommend that they be included, just as any of the other unit projects are.
So just so I'm following the description, and I'm going to call them categories. So I'll throw out a third term, but you guys call them programs.
Well, I like categories now.
Breakers is all the breakers, like any line that needs new breakers, those projects go in here, and you say we need breakers on the this sub to this sub, and that's one
for
within.
If they fall within the asset renewal kind of another, to add another category to the to the confusion here. So we're tracking basically a fleet of equipment that ages over time, and once that equipment starts to not be modern anymore, or ages and maybe isn't going to function, or we have a hard time finding parts to do maintenance on that breaker, it would fall into this end of life replacement program.
Okay, yep, got it.
So I think with that, let's move on and have Chris talk a little bit more about the projects themselves. This is forward there.
Okay. So, Dave wanted me to talk a little bit about the five projects introduced in the 2018 TCR here. So end-of-life replacement program lines. This is the first year that we're asking for that one. Major line refurbishment program, the Black Dog to Wilson Substation 115 uprate project, Lawrence Falls subcapacity upgrades, and Hollydale Plymouth area grid upgrades. We did talk a little bit, just the previous conversation was on our end of life replacement programs, but the lines, as I mentioned earlier, it's capital asset replacement of individual parts, so mainly poles and cross arms that are targeted on multiple circuits across our service territory. So the way that this group is actually managed is we do have discrete categories based on voltage class, because of the volume of different asset locations that it occurs on the service territory. So we do manage by individual circuit, but it's at another level down because of the volume that we're doing. So they get lumped into what is the voltage class for the end of life replacement program that we're doing, and that's how we manage those assets or manage that program in transmission. Moving on then to major line refurbishment, again, very, very similar. There's no black and white to say that a project will fall under end-of-life replacement or major line refurbishment, but I'll just say it's a replacement of in volume of assets, of those capital assets on that line. So, again, poles and cross arms, where a majority of the poles and cross arms associated with that line have been identified as defective during our routine aerial and foot inspections.
So if these are new categories, how did you account for them previously?
So they're not necessarily new to transmission, but they're being asked for new in this TCR.
So how did we pay for them before?
They weren't being recovered other than what may have been in the test year back in 2013. But again, any incremental costs over and above that test year amount would be recovered now in the TCR.
So prior, it was actually suppressing earnings because it was not flowing through a TCR, but rather just the P&L itself.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. When the rate case, the base rates went into effect, now it's been, 4 or 5 years since that time. Now we're just coming forth with this and including it in the TCR. So it hasn't, the amount that we're asking for hasn't been recovered.
Okay. And the base rates before covered it? Prior to this?
Yeah, whatever was in there.
But prior to the TCR existing,
yes.
It was all recovered in the base rates.
Right.
Is it ever influenced? You had stated that this and some of the other items they're not really black and white. There's not really a dollar amount that triggers whether it's repairs and maintenance or you're trying to include it in the TCR. Is that influenced by how the repair and maintenance budget is looking?
Just for clarity, where it's not black and white is what capital category it falls under, whether it's end of life replacement or major line refurbishment.
Okay,
not determined if it's categorized as operations and maintenance repairs, then it can only be that, regardless of what the cost of that operation and maintenance is.
And one other clarification is everything that we're including in the TCR is capital related. We're not including any O&M, any operating and maintenance expense. These are all capital investment related costs.
Okay, continue on.
Oh, that's right, it is my turn. The next project is Black Dog to Wilson, 115 kV uprate. So this is replacing circuit breakers at our Black Dog substation, increasing the capacity of those circuit breakers so that they can match the capacity of the connected transmission system in the area. So it's increasing the capacity at the Black Dog substation. The next one is Lawrence Falls sub-capacity upgrade. This is another capacity project that increases the conductor size on two circuits, a 69 kV and a 115 kV circuit, to be able to inject or take a greater capacity from the Split Rock substation outside of the Sioux Falls area into that load area.
So I might just point out something for your information. You can see that the construction start here is January of 2018. So for 5 months, we're only earning a return on the construction expenditures. That's the only revenue requirement. And then when it goes into service in May, Then we have depreciation expense, property taxes, and that's when other revenue requirements kick in once it goes into service. So we've got all that modeled in the TCR, so the revenue requirements are by month, actually, based on when it goes into service. So we're
And the last project is the Hollydale project, which has multiple aspects to it, but it's the purchase of a Great River Energy 69 kV line. It's doing a expansion of an existing Hollydale substation in addition to rebuilding two circuits between our Gleason Lake and Parker's Lake substations and installing capacitor banks for increased capacity at our Gleason Lake substation, again to for service of load growth within that area.
Did GRE build something new, or why would they sell that, and why would you buy it?
No, the GRE had the asset there, and to my knowledge, they had built the area around it, and the asset had been de-energized for some time, and I'm not 100% sure on why or what the purpose was, but I know that their system interconnected grid around there allowed them to do that. So it was either they sell the asset to us and we had a need for it, or they could decommission it and remove it altogether. Well, so there was a need, and we took the opportunity for it.
So I might just kind of bring it all together and say, so why do you think, why was the revenue requirement roughly the same in 2018 as what it currently is for 2017? And the basic answer to that is these five new projects add about $100,000 to the revenue requirement. All of the other 36 projects already in the TCR either went into service and started creating more revenue requirements, or there were more expenditures that continued for those projects. That was about $500,000. So you're up about $600,000. But then the true-up, the carryover from 2017 to 2018, the true-up piece, that's dramatically lower in 2018 than it was when we entered 2017, about $400,000. So that's why we're a couple hundred thousand dollars more in 2018 than 17, basically. This
just meant to, oh, said the five new projects add $100,000.
I
was making that note. And then what adds the $500,000?
There was probably another $500,000 from the other 36 projects that are already in the TCR. They're continuing to either have more expenditures made, or they go into service in 2018 and start generating higher levels of revenue requirements.
Okay.
Are you guys, for your MISO costs and costs and revenues, is it almost a wash between what you get, what you pay, and what you earn from MISO, or where are we on that balance?
Well, it is now. In 2017 and 2018, there was very, very small amount net cost because they are basically offsetting each other. Mm-hmm. That's a relatively new thing for us. We were generally getting
more back,
much more revenue, yeah.
Do you expect that to continue? Do you expect it to go the other way, where the revenues, your revenues will go down and the costs are going to go up?
I'm going to ask Chuck to answer that. Did you hear that, Chuck?
I did. At least for the next couple of years, it seems like we hover back and forth near zero. The long-term trends we've seen is that we were on the earlier side of these big projects, these CapEx projects that were regionally shared earlier in this decade. And the other utilities are doing some of their build-outs now in the later part of the decade, and so proportionally, they are taking a greater share in these last couple of years than they had in the past. The year-to-year, this amount, whether it's a net revenue or net expense, can kind of jump around a little bit, and that's due to a lot of factors, including the relative loads and the relative assets in each of those utilities. So I think we'll have to see in the planning, as the planning horizon extends into the 2020s, what the relative share of the utilities will be will look like looking out there, but at least for the foreseeable future, it seems like we're in a slight net expense for the next couple of years, and then we'll see how that that proportion evolves.
All right, thank you.
Just thought we'd kind of finish up here with a pie chart that gives you a broader perspective on all the revenue requirements that are being recovered through the TCR. You can see here that there are four fairly large projects that pretty much comprise 75% of all the revenue requirements. We have these programs slash blankets that we've been talking about. They comprise just 4%, so not a lot of the impact. And then all the other projects, the other 28 projects, make up about a fifth of the recovery. So that just kind of gives you a broad sense of what's being recovered here. It's primarily CapEx.
I was thinking earlier on you said the Minot project was its own project.
You guys, Vic, you need a mic.
The Minot project was mentioned earlier on as being a specifically listed project, and I didn't see it on the list of five new ones. So it was on from prior years?
Yep, it was on in 2016. We started to recover the Minot project.
Okay.
Is that called Minot load serving?
Yep.
And when's that expected to be put into service then? Not until 2019?
I can find that here. There's a schedule in the filing. Some reason I'm not seeing it on the construction schedule. Here it is. In service December 2018.
Okay. So about a year out?
Yeah.
So what's being collected in the TCR for that now would be the expenditures to date?
Just the return on those expenditures, the return component.
The return on only expenditures that have been made. So the bulk of it probably hasn't been spent yet, correct?
Right.
Okay. Just kind of get a feel for it. So
when you're looking at replacing components, say circuit breakers, is it just based on X number of years they're replaced? Do they start to indicate that they're weakening? What's the triggering mechanism? Is it based on time or is it based on performance?
It is a lot based on time, and there is annual testing that's required to show that the breaker is operational. But the primary focus on that end of life program is based on the expected life of that asset and targeting the replacement for that asset once it's nearing its end of useful life. Now, that's not to say that we actually execute on the replacement of that breaker when its expected useful life is complete. In fact, we have assets that all over in our service territory that probably are in need of end-of-life replacement that are still operational today that continue to be operational.
So it's not necessarily a true end-of-life. It's an estimated end-of-life.
It's an estimated end-of-life, and we want to try to basically the target of all of the end-of-life is to get to it before it fails, and we have to get to it before it's an emergency to get to it.
Right.
Just a clarification, if I will, on Victor's question. We've spent about $16 million on the Minot load serving. It's CWIP. But we have classified $500,000 of that project for whatever reason. So there is a little bit of depreciation in those other revenue requirements being calculated as well. But the project itself, which will end up being close to $50 million, won't be put in service until the end of 2018.
Maybe that $500,000 is like the rights of way or something like that? Maybe.
Yeah, probably some small part of the project, yeah.
These projects done in-house or with your own construction division?
Yes and no. To the extent that our crews are available to be able to do the construction, we do, but we do have contract both substation and transmission line crews that do work for us, all different types of work for us.
So no financial connection to our ownership connection, I should say, to XL independent contractors that are?
Correct, yeah, they would be independent contractors.
Anything else from either of you two or the others on the phone? Any questions for company?
I thought Sarah asked a good question regarding the impact that wind projects are going to have on the need for new transmission projects. And that was one of the data requests. Oh, wait, you asked that on the ADP, Sarah? Not on this. Well, you brought it into this memo. So I wasn't quite clear about what you all meant by the response. David's page 2 of her memo, third paragraph, was starting with the recent completion of several large. So maybe if we can just talk through that so I can better understand what you're saying.
Well, I think the initial part of that answer is just referring to the fact that the CapEx projects are largely completed now.
Mm-hmm.
And so what in the past may have been spent on those projects is now going to be redirected, likely into new generation.
Okay.
There will be a lot of wind generation activity in the 2019-2020 time period, as you are aware.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just in general, we've done taken a look at what our projections are for spending in the future, here in the near future, and it's it's not like we're cutting back. I think the point being made here, you know, both in real dollar amounts and as a percentage of our full portfolio of investment, transmission distribution continue to have a growing share. So
you're building more generation, and you're going to need more transmission to serve that generation.
Well,
basically,
I don't know if Chuck, you want to weigh in, but I'll just say that I think we're also positioned very well already with the transmission investments that have been made. I'm certain that there will be more transmission investment that will continue to support the large amounts of wind that we've got planned.
and so this is the part so we've invested a lot with the big projects, right? The big CapEx mm-hmm. projects. But that last sentence basically says that we're going to be investing more than was invested in the previous 5-year period. So we can expect even more investment than what was invested on the CapEx. And then when the company takes into consideration the cost of the new generation, and this is a question that I've asked before, and calculates that, are you also calculating, and then says this is going to save customers money, are you also calculating the cost of the new transmission to serve that load? That's all factored in.
I would probably want to get back to you with that question
okay.
and find out more about that. I don't know for sure how those calculations are being made or whether transmission's being included in that comparison, but
Okay, that's fine. It's an important question. And
are you asking in terms of when generation is proposed, are there transmission costs embedded in that proposed cost of generation, or do I carry them in say my portfolio for generation right. to serve or transmission serving generation? Internally, when we are the customer and it's transmission serving generation, those costs are borne by generation energy supply. So you wouldn't see it within the transmission portfolio, but it'd be a cost associated with energy supply.
Well, I guess I'm not really interested how the company parses it out. What I'm interested in is the big message that is often told to the customers that we're investing in 1,500 megawatts of wind, and it's going to save you $80 million. And is there an offset of $80 million of in transmission costs that are not calculated in that, or is that a net number where even after we build the generation and the transmission to serve it, all of which the customers are going to pay for, it still saves them $80 million. So that's what I'm interested in knowing.
Fair question, and we'll follow up with
awesome. That. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Staff, did you have more to add on that question, but more generally on anything that we've heard today?
No, I do not.
That was a short presentation. Okay, so just go around one more time. Nothing else to add?
Nope.
Okay, are there any objections from anyone to the evidence produced? And by the evidence, I'm talking about both the recording as well as the handout that you presented becoming part of the official record?
I will just add, I forgot to mention, but those revisions that I pointed to on the slide will be filing updated work papers in the next few days reflecting those changes. So.
Okay. Good. No objection from staff either?
No objection.
Okay. So that evidence will become part of the official record upon which the final decision is based. Are there any other items that anyone has to add for the record? If not, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thank you.